Yes, we are back on.
G'day. Patty and Mike here. We've got a special guest today, Tim. Tim, I don't know, do you want to say hello?
Hello, boys. Thanks for having me here.
So we're not allowed to mention how fat Tim is or how old Tim is. So I thought I'd just get out of the way first because it's going to come out at some point. Tim's someone I've looked up to for a while, actually. He's a podiatrist down in Wollongong. Do you own it or run it, or you founded it? The Running Lab.
The Running Lab.
Yeah.
Founded.
Okay.
Cool. That's just you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as we sit here, we're all barefoot, and we've just
as we should be.
Tim's literally just been poking me in the foot for the last couple of minutes, pulling my big toe and yanking different bones in the middle of my feet. And I was kind of happy because he's satisfied that my cuboid moves enough, and I'm like, yes, great.
Yes, tick of approval.
So that's where we are right now.
But have we talked about the big dirty wart on the bottom of your foot?
Yeah, they know about the warts.
Okay, just checking.
Just mention it again.
Yeah, help. So Tim, you own the Running Lab. You're a podiatrist. Tell us about that.
How did that happen?
I was a rugby player and a sprinter for many years.
Mm-hmm.
When I learned how to run properly long distance, and as you can see, if I'm not built like a long distance runner like Paddy, I probably weigh what, twice you.
Potentially. Okay. Yeah.
Hopefully not too much fat in all that.
Tim is more built as a cross-hitter than a long-distance runner.
Yeah. Okay, so rugby days and sprinting days was training was all mechanics, drills, and then you go out and perform.
Yeah.
When I stopped playing rugby and at some point through there with work and just with life, I learned how to run from a couple of great coaches, Lee Saxby, I had Jason Donaldson, and then Brian McKenzie were big influences as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when I learned to run, it was just a crazy concept that it was just drills.
Mm.
It was drills and technique. And I sat there and thought about my work and every broken runner who comes in with running diseases. So I call them diseases because it seems like they're just contagious. And they come into the clinic and I thought they don't need magic shoes. They don't need magic orthotics. They need to freaking learn how to run.
So you were a podiatrist for a while.
Many years.
Treating obviously foot, ankle, calf, whatever injuries. And you hadn't thought about this, you know, learning to run sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so this is a moment for you.
When my running improved in terms of long distance, not sprinting, in terms of long distance, I was like, this just got so much easier and it made perfect sense. And I thought, who teaches people how to run? Yeah. We don't throw a kid in the pool and go, shit, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Not doing so well. Every sport we do, we train mechanics and drills. So when we perform, it's more natural.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, the problem with running is we've all done it. Some point in our life, left foot, right foot.
But we've never practiced it.
No, we've never been taught what's good and bad. If you watch a toddler run, you know, some of them look a little bit ordinary, but most of them just look natural.
Yeah.
And it just flows. Yeah. I got a great video of my...
None of them have Achilles tendinopathies.
No, no. They don't concern themselves with which part of their foot hits the ground first, cadence, none of that matters.
Yeah.
They just run. So when I learned how to run, I sat there and thought, oh, shit, all these broken people need to learn how to run. And I sort of looked over my shoulder and thought, who teaches people to run? If you go down a track, there are sprint coaches.
Yeah.
Always. And a track session is easily two-thirds mechanics, drills, work piece.
Yeah.
Running, there's nothing. It's just your warm-up is lace up your shoes. Your drills are take it easy in the first 500 meters and ease into it.
Yeah.
And away we go. So the Running Lab was born from that. And then I started to work out how I could actually do that in a clinic.
Yeah.
As you've probably worked out with yours, is that running inside is not the same as running outside.
Yeah.
I don't care what your treadmill is, it's not the same.
Mm.
So developed a program. It took me about 9 months to work out how I was going to do it in clinic and actually offer something that worked.
Mm.
And the answer was a curved treadmill.
Yeah.
With dual high-speed cameras, which wasn't easy either.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of programs out there that have dual capture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do it on your phone, but you can't do it on a quality system to show people.
Yeah.
So once we got all this sorted, I started getting people through and it just worked. And people were improving because all they were doing was practicing the mechanics before we went to running.
Yeah.
Making sure the patterns were there, because that's my entire job, habits and patterns.
Yeah.
Okay. Making sure that the habits, patterns, and pronation, flat feet, but we'll ignore that one.
Yeah.
Okay. habits and patterns. So once we started working, that worked well. Then I started doing workshops. And the first workshop I did in a day, I had no idea what would change. Because the program I was doing in clinic was 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Worked a treat every time. Didn't matter how good they were, what level, beginner, you know, wanting to be elite, it worked for everybody.
Yeah.
But in a day, I thought, what's going to change? And the biggest thing was, and the reason I knew the day workshop would work, I did before and after video analysis of everyone. And at the end, everyone was sitting there critiquing everyone else's running.
Mm. Yeah.
So we always see our faults. So on the after, which had changed from the before, everyone's looking at themselves and thinking, still overstriding, still this. But everyone else in the group was pointing out all the things that had improved.
Yeah, right.
You know, their oscillation up and down with their head barely changed. Oh, sorry, was barely actually going up and down now in the after. Their posture had improved, so many things. So when everyone else was recognizing everyone's improvements, that's when I knew the day workshop could work as well. Because not everyone's going to come into the clinic, you know, four times in 6 weeks. So long story short, it became something that I realized that nobody had in terms of running coaching. And I was treating broken runners, but now I could offer them not just treatment for the symptoms, but also a solution to get out of it and actually come out a better runner. More injury proof plus better performance. Now, me, good performance is not times. That's great. And that's awesome to sit there and say, like, what's your PB marathon, which I'll never get to?
2:54.01.
Now, if that was your PB and you came and saw me in 10 years' time, but you hadn't run a single marathon since doing that PB, because every time you got close, you got injured. Every time you tried to train, you got injured. Well, that's an awesome PB, but what have you done for the last 10 years? You've been injured. So for me, performance is also, as a measure, unless we're elite, performance is about actually being able to get out there whenever you want, do whatever you want, and not be busted and broken all the time. That's performance.
Just being able to do the thing you love all the time.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah, exactly.
And the flow and effect for that potentially is that PB or whatever.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly right.
Because you can train because you're not in a boot or icing or shin splinty or Achilles or whatever.
The number one way not to achieve a goal is being injured.
Yeah.
But selling injury prevention sucks.
Oh.
Nobody buys injury prevention.
Because when you're not injured.
When you're not hurting,
you're
not going to go, I should do something about not hurting.
So you still have to sell performance.
Yeah.
And that's what I learned early on. Selling injury prevention was didn't work. But if you sell performance, is we're going to help you run better. But if you're doing it right, you are preventing injury as well. And that was the beauty of it.
Sweet. So that's how the Running Lab was born. Through that.
So you use two high-speed cameras on a banana treadmill.
On a banana treadmill, yes.
Because I'm interested, why the banana treadmill? Why not a flat one? What are the differences?
So when I first saw the banana treadmill, being the Woodway, which was about the only one around at that time, I saw it overseas and thought, that looks intriguing.
Yeah.
I need one of these. Then I thought, no, I need to get on one of these. So it took me a while to find one in Australia, and I found one at a fitness show, jumped on it. 40 seconds later, I was like, I need one in the garage.
Yeah.
You know, it's cold, it's wet, and yes, we could just go out there, but imagine having one in the garage and you don't have to. Anyway, got the treadmill to my clinic, not quite my garage, and the treadmill was fantastic because when you're on a curved treadmill, there's no motor. When you're on a motorized treadmill, all you got to do is pick your feet up as quick as the belt. So you can crank it up to 17 Ks an hour or whatever else, and you're flying. Out in the real world, that doesn't happen. So your mechanics on a motorized treadmill are not the same as your mechanics out in the real world. Things change. And as practitioners, when we're using a motorized treadmill, we've got to account for the fact that, take it with a grain of salt, we're not seeing everything, but we can still pick up patterns. That's the big thing. So the curved treadmill was amazing. I've since sold that. And so as much as I loved it and it was a big part of the Running Lab starting in the clinic, now I just go down the local track and take people for a run. So there's nothing better than actually coaching in person, on site, outdoors, where we can actually run. So once I stopped using the treadmill, I basically sold it. Ironically, now I have a curved treadmill in my garage, which is an air runner. So several brands have come out with treadmills since. The Woodway had quite a steep curve. And so it was a learning process. If you're a good runner outside, just a regular runner, great runner, you had to learn the machine. The Trueform that came out, same thing. It had a very small sweet spot. So if you actually drifted away from that sweet spot, just picture a curved treadmill. There's a sweet spot where you flow. On the Woodway, if you go too far forward, you do get flicked out the back. Okay. On the Trueform, if you go, you know, an inch further back from the sweet spot, you're in quicksand. You're just going nowhere. Then the Air Runner came out with a treadmill, and first time I jumped on it, I was just amazed. I was like, this feels very, very true to running. And everybody that I've put on the Air Runner treadmill, if you're a good runner regularly, you jump on that thing and within 30 seconds, you're fine. Whereas the Woodway took a few sessions for people to actually even to get comfortable. So was I seeing a true running pattern? The answer is, well, no.
No, because you're seeing a true running pattern after five sessions on the Woodway. And that's that.
And people describe it as feeling like they're going uphill all the time.
So I've used one once before. I couldn't tell you which one it was. Probably for a couple of minutes at the gym, and I just didn't like it. It felt weird. I felt like I was fighting it. And I was like, this is – I don't like it. So I just got off, and I've never used one since.
The Air Runner. Next time you're in Wollongong, give me a shout.
Next time.
Yeah, the Air Runner, credit to them, whatever they've done in the engineering, whether it was on purpose or not, they've just nailed it. Mm. That angle doesn't feel like you're going uphill.
Yeah.
A lot of people, because it's very hard to overstride on a curved treadmill.
Yeah.
Overstriding's the devil, which I'm sure we'll get to in some point. Overstriding's the devil, okay? It's not about heel strike, forefoot strike, midfoot strike. Overstriding is the devil. Right, so on a curved treadmill, overstriding's very, very hard, because if you overstride, you've got to grab the belt early, above normal ground level, and you've almost got to hook yourself and pull it back, okay? So it encourages a faster cadence.
Yeah.
It encourages a closer contact to your body, but when on the woodway, when you've got that really steep curve, you're loading up eccentrically earlier per step.
Yeah, right.
So your calves, they're gone quick. Hammies, gone. So again, curved treadmills, yes, love them.
Mm.
I don't like motorized treadmills. But if you're in a hotel, you're traveling, and you can jump on a treadmill and get a run in, fantastic.
Go for it.
But for me, motorized treadmills all day, every day is RSI.
Yeah.
Nothing changes. So whatever your weak point is, you're going to chip away and just peck, 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 broken, shins again.
Yeah.
Okay. If you get on the road, I think that's, you know, a step better. You get off-road, you get some trail running, some bush trails.
Yes.
Every step's different. The body loves it.
Yeah, so good.
The trouble is you run slower. And the mind, you said? Bingo.
Yeah.
But you run slower. So our GPS says we're actually behind pace of our target training times.
Yeah.
So running the bush is like a bit of an ego sort of stop, is that you got to put that aside and just go with the flow.
Mm.
But it's so good for the body. But when people do it for the first time, is they get beat up because their joints aren't used to going anywhere but up, down, forwards.
Mm.
Movement variety. Pretty important.
It's so important. We talk about it all the time where, like, even if you're just your normal stock standard marathon runner, you need to get out in the trails, do something else, challenge your body into those different positions, and that just bang.
I heard Herb Elliott on a podcast, I can't remember who it was, and it was one of the most beautiful things. He was just like, he did most of his training in the bush. He did his track sessions, his speed sessions, but he did so much in the bush. And the way he described what he was seeing and feeling was poetry. And I would not do it justice if I even try. But, you know, the dew on the leaves, the rays coming through the canopy above, and just, he was just like, he was just a huge advocate of being off the road, and obviously he wasn't a world record trail runner, so you don't have to be a trail runner expert just to run trail. It's great for the body.
So why is overstriding the devil?
I was gonna say it's like, I have to ask this.
All right, so let's think of running as repetitions. That's one of the big things that I teach. Okay, if we're in a gym, it's always repetitions, and you're doing back squat day and you're gonna do 5x5.
Yeah.
You're going to do some warm-up sets, and grand total, you're going to do about 40 squats. And you're going to think about every single squat that you do, from warm-up through to your final lift, which hopefully is still holding a, you know, a garnish of good technique. Okay. And if you're squatting with your knees caving in, back hunched over, awful technique, someone's going to tap you on the shoulder and go, buddy, you're going to hurt yourself. But the point is, if you are squatting like crap, you will actually get stronger. You will put more weight on the bar per week. Until you break. Okay. When we run, if we go out for a 3K run, let's assume there's 3,000 steps there. I just teach people, instead of thinking it as a 3K run, think of it as 3,000 opportunities, 3,000 repetitions. Those opportunities that keep me employed as a podiatrist, or you guys as well, okay, or 3,000 repetitions. Now, if we can be 10% more efficient per stride, per step, per contact with the ground, and I'm talking anywhere, we've got huge scope to pull that 10% from. It's not much, but times that by 3,000 repetitions in one run, two runs, three runs, four runs. It adds up very quickly, and that's why the injury rate in runners is so high. It's not because they're in the wrong shoes. It's that the sheer number of repetitions, there's not many things in sport that rival the repetitions of a runner. And so when you think of it as repetitions, every time you contact the ground, there's impact. Yes, your hockers will absorb every bit of it, right? And your Air Max and everything else, all your cushioning, okay? Just like running on soft sands, way easier than running on hard sand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. People probably can't see our faces here, but okay, we'll come back to that. But basically, when you're running on marshmallows, it's all well and good, but you lose your elasticity. That's the short side of that. Okay, so when we land on the ground, there's impact taken through the body.
Yep.
The heavier you are, the heavier you are on impact, the more impact's taken up through your bones and joints. Your muscles and your tendons and your connective tissue should absorb, and you should actually be able to, I should say, should actually take some of that load, and you should be able to spring out the other side with it.
Yeah.
So reuse of injury.
Yeah.
But when you hit heavy, boom, 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 your muscles don't extend and contract as much as they vibrate.
Yeah.
Of course they extend and contract, but there's a lot of vibration through that, and that's through your bones and joints. So things tighten up through that, but also the sheer stress on our bones and joints increases. Yeah. So very simply, the sound we make when we contact the ground is a sign of how heavy we are on the ground.
Yeah. 100%.
And when I say that to a runner, they look at me and say, I'm a heavy runner. And I stare them in the eyes and say, don't be. Like, what? I'm like, take your headphones out and run quietly. Now, over striding, when you land on a foot out in front, I don't care if you're an awesome ballerina and you point your toes and you land on your forefoot out in front. Is your foot in contact with the ground in front of the body cannot help you go forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody listening that's not driving a car, if you stand up and stick one foot in front of you, just stick it on the ground, and only using your front foot, just your front foot, try and walk forward.
Won't happen, you fall backwards.
There's one way to do it. Lean forward enough at the hips.
Yeah.
How many runners lean forward at the hips, collapse at the hips? Because if your foot's contacting the ground, you know, 30 to 60 centimeters in front of your body, is that you have to get in front of that foot, because the only way that your foot can push you forward is to be under and behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The foot's got to push behind you for you to go forward. It can't do it from in front. So the further in front you contact the ground, overstriding, the further in contact, the longer it takes for you to get your body weight over your foot, so that then you can actually push yourself forward. Slows your cadence down. Cadence is elasticity, not speed, which you can come to as well.
Mm.
Cadence is elasticity. We are born with elastic tissue. If we can use that, that shit's free.
Yeah.
We all got it. It's free. Yeah. So when people talk about cadence and it's efficient, but people don't understand it, they just look at their watch and they're trying to run at a faster cadence. So they run faster.
Yeah.
160.
But that's not, it's not decreasing their overstride.
170. Well, by the time they hit 180, because they've heard it's the magic number, they die. They're sprinting and they're out of breath.
They're thinking, well, I've never run this fast before, but I'm also out of breath.
That's right. Yeah, 100 meters, they're dead.
Yeah.
So cadence and speed are not the same thing. You can run 180 cadence on the spot.
Yep.
I could run around this little room 180 cadence and spend 30 seconds getting around this 5-meter room.
Yeah.
I'm not going to win anything, but I'm very elastic. So cadence is elasticity.
Mm-hmm.
And when you overstride, cadence drops. Your impact increases, okay, through all your bones and joints. And as long as you've got the latest Nike Vapor or Hoka or whatever else, they're all designed to reduce that impact.
Mm-hmm.
But you're born with tissue, you're born with certain bones, certain physiology. And if you can tap into that, it's way more powerful than any shoe out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the marketing doesn't quite lead to that. You know, Brooks have got ballistic rock shields this year. And
the marketing leads in the exact opposite direction.
But that's their job. So I don't hate on them for that. Okay.
I do,
but
I can do.
But look, people get paid a lot of money to sell stuff.
Yeah.
And in our jobs, we're not allowed to market, you know, our professions, because there's rules.
Yeah.
We can market, but there's just strict guidelines, and we will be careful where we go with it. Footwear industry or anything else, we don't have to. So anyway, back to the original question, which I think was about overstriding.
Yeah.
So people say to take shorter strides. I say no. What's a short stride? What's a long stride? Okay, that becomes a measurement. Whereas if you run quietly, it is very hard to overstride and run quietly.
Yeah.
So simpler cues that get a better result. So running quietly is my first thing I'll teach anybody if I have never met them or even the first time I see them. Okay. Yeah. Is that what I want you to do is to run tall. So keep your head on your shoulders, because that's posture.
Mm-hmm.
If your head is on your shoulders, people look at me funny. I'm like, hey, if your head's on your shoulders, your posture is going to be great. Don't worry about your abs. Don't worry about your butt. Don't worry about anything else. Is that if your head's on your shoulders, you're nice and tall, but where do people's head go when they get tired? Looking for pennies on the ground. Yeah. What about uphill? I'm not looking up there. Hell no. And I'm not saying look up the hill, but if your head's on your shoulders, you're nice and tall, it's a lot easier to breathe.
Yeah.
Mm. It's rib cage thing. Stick your head forward, rib cage collapses. So when we're tired and fatigued, we make it harder to breathe.
Which makes no sense.
Yeah. But if we've got a cue to stay tall, if we go uphill and we hinge at the hips like people do, because if head goes forward, hips go back.
Yeah.
Anterior rotation of the pelvis at the least, you lose your glutes.
Mm.
Big massive things. I got plenty back here. Okay?
Yeah.
And they're there for running. They're there for movement. And if we actually roll our pelvis forward, so if you sit there and just roll your pelvis forward, stick it out the back, there's no glutes. I don't care how much you do clamshells like for 4 hours a day. You can't use them.
That's just putting yourself in a mechanically disadvantageous position.
It's just
right?
impossible.
Yeah.
So if we stay tall when we run and we run quietly, we've taken care of so many things without getting fancy.
Yeah.
Without using the awesome facilities you've got at Clove Valley, without using the awesome stuff that I like with my high-tech gadgets.
Yeah.
That's all awesome, but the simplicity of running is that it's repetitions every rep counts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can count for you or against you.
Mm-hmm.
Every rep counts. And if we run tall and we run quietly, a lot of the fancy stuff takes care of itself. Then us, we can just like tap in and get the, you know, the 1%ers, the 10%ers, yeah, and make the subtle changes.
Yeah.
Give them the personalized cues. And that's, yeah, my aim with when I teach is get the generic stuff, make sure their feet work, but we'll come to that if we've got, yeah, enough hours. Make sure their feet work. Make sure they got the prerequisites to be able to run. And then when we actually go and do some personal sessions with running down at the track, I'm just trying to find the one or two cues that they can take away and use whenever they run.
Yeah.
Because we need our brains to drift off when we run.
Oh, yeah.
But when we get tired, when we get sloppy, we need to just have a couple of things to pull back on.
And it is a skill, right?
So 100%. Yeah, every body part's involved.
Yeah. So the good thing about running is you can just drift off and think about nothing, yep, but you need to get those movement patterns kind of down pat first.
But run if you got
well, and then you can kind of drift off.
And if you got a checklist of 12 things, because you're worried about your head position, your traps, your shoulders, are you using your abs, is my butt switched on, oh, am I too quad dominant, not enough hammy, which part of my foot hit the ground first?
Yeah.
By the time you look at your foot, your head position shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then how much fun is running?
Exactly. So we need a short checklist just to help people run better.
So I use that as well, telling people to run quietly.
Mm.
But if you try and run quietly in the latest Nike React, you just sink your hips a little bit lower and like almost extend your foot in further and try and bend your knees a little bit more to absorb the impact. And
so throw that with stay tall.
Trying to like overcome the amount of cushion in the shoe,
yeah,
is quite tricky a lot of the time, I find.
So I did an in-clinic experiment for a long time,
mm,
and wasn't planned. None of my stuff's planned, to be honest. It just happens.
Yeah.
Anytime I talk, I'm like, no, this wasn't foresight. This is hindsight. is that I had everybody on a motorized treadmill,
yeah,
and I had them running. I just put it about 10 Ks an hour, very comfortable, mm-hmm, in their shoes. I recorded about a 10-second snippet of them running in shoes and then got their shoes and socks off, had them run barefoot on the exact same treadmill, exact same speed.
Mm.
Gave them a minute just to get the feel of, oh, shit, this is weird. I don't have, yeah, shoes on. Recorded them again once they looked comfortable and they said they were fine.
Yeah.
And then I played it back to them on the big screen with speakers loud. Every time they ran in shoes, it was way, way louder,
yeah,
and slappier than barefoot. Yeah. Every single human. And this went on for years.
Mm-hmm.
Every runner, every field sport athlete that came in, I did this to.
Yeah.
And it just purely on the sound alone, you can hear the more cushioning you have, the harder you've got to hit the ground. Your brain needs feedback from your feet.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what they're there for. So, okay?
Push. So you're saying you have to push through the cushion of the, yeah, shoe to find something solid.
Yep. And you won't do it intentionally.
Yeah.
But that's what happens, mm, is the more cushion you have, as much as it feels like a lovely pillow, is that when you're running soft sand, you lose all that elasticity that you've got in the arch of your foot, you've got in your Achilles tendon and calf, you lose that elasticity. And so you sort of squish around. When you're on a marshmallow in a shop walking around,
mm,
boom, this feels great. Yeah. This is the answer to all my running problems.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It makes your feet feel nice.
Ah, it's nice because the world's hard. How dare they?
Yeah.
So it feels good, but the mechanics change thereafter. But then I've got a little part of me on my other shoulder that sits there and says, hey, at least these people are running and not at home getting diabetes.
Yeah.
So if the shoe allows them to keep going and they don't feel injury for now, is that part of me says, well, it can't be all evil.
Yeah.
You know, if they're in my clinic, that's a different story. They've asked me for my advice. They've asked for my help. Mm. But to go out and say that every shoe with cushions is evil is not true either, is that I don't believe we should be running in barefoot shoes on concrete all the time.
Mm.
I Absolutely. Can do it. My feet work great on it, but not all the time. Is that there comes a time where just the sheer hardness of concrete,
mm,
and mile after mile, step after step that we're on that concrete, I believe in some cushioning.
That was my next question for you. I think the foot and the human body and everything is put together quite nicely so that we don't need dual density midsoles. We don't, yep, need each cushion, like, because that's not how a foot was designed to work. But our foot also probably wasn't designed to run 42 kilometers on concrete in a straight line at the same speed. That's Spot probably on. Not a natural thing either.
Nope.
So why do we try and run, quote unquote, naturally on concrete for 4 hours?
Because it sounds very idealistic.
At, yeah, that point, that's when, okay, some kind of, you know, cushiony thing to absorb, like, not absorb might not be the right word, but to
barrier.
Kind of,
yeah,
make barrier. Sure the concrete doesn't hurt your foot as much. Yeah. Something, yeah, has got to be appropriate, right? So where do you sit on that?
I 100% agree. So the barefoot running thing, I always say, it's not wrong, and it said that shoes mess feet up.
Mm.
They do. They keep me employed. Don't tell everybody. No one listens.
No, no one listens. We have a small audience.
So shoes keep me employed because they change what feet do, which we'll come to. But being able to run barefoot shouldn't be the aim. Being able to live barefoot should be the aim.
Yeah.
So one of my biggest things and the first thing I address with runners is not their running shoes. You run a lot.
Yeah.
How many hours a week?
Myself?
Yeah.
Oh, I might run 5 times a week.
Done.
An hour average?
5 hours a week.
Plus or minus.
How many hours a week does the average person spend in their work shoes?
Holy shit.
60?
Yeah.
Including travel?
10 to 12 by 5. Yeah. 60
including
plus.
Travel?
Yeah.
All right. So you got 60 hours a week in your work shoes.
Yeah.
And you got 5 hours a week in your running shoes.
Yeah.
And your work shoes are stiff, rigid, high heel, pointy shoes.
Yeah.
They look nothing like a foot.
No.
So let's put your arm in a sling for 60 hours a week and let's go and do 100 push-ups on Saturday. How's it going to work?
Not great.
No, that's right. So all those shoes, now I was just talking about men's shoes then.
Yeah.
Not women's shoes.
Yeah.
Okay. Men's shoes are all lifted at the heel.
Yeah.
If we lift our heel up higher than our toes, it's like we're walking downhill all the time. I think I stole that from Michael Denny Smith. Who might have stole it from me. I don't know. Someone. No, I heard his analogy with that, and I did steal that from Michael, definitely.
I love that. From before.
Yeah.
He's one of the other physios that we work with.
Definitely. So when the heel is higher than the toes, the muscles and tendons on the front of your shin have to work for longer per step, just walking, because they're not coming. Your foot's not coming down to parallel.
Yeah.
It's coming down past parallel. Okay, so they're having to work longer per step.
Walking down a real gradual downhill.
Yeah. But also, your calf muscles and Achilles are shortened by 14 to 15 mils for 60 hours a week since kindergarten.
Yeah.
Less hours at kindergarten, okay, we'll call it 30, 35 hours a week. But also, that 14 mil raise on your Clark school shoes and Ascent school shoes, their lovely little line is their sports shoes in disguise. I hand them to parents and I say, would you run in this? It's a brick. But the big thing is that 14 mil raise on those school shoes at that age for that length of foot is like any of us adults here wearing about 3 to 4 inches.
100%. Yeah.
Okay. It's huge. I've actually built a shoe in my clinic based on my body weight and took the dimensions of just a school shoe for a child who's 20 kilos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that's kindy, maybe year one, maybe year two. Okay. My littlies aren't even 20 kilos yet. They're kindergarten.
Mm.
My eldest probably is maybe 22 kilos. She's grade 3. So anyway, so we've got about 20 kilogram child in this shoe, and I took the dimensions of that shoe and built me a shoe. Cut the sole off and put the thickness of the rubber relative to the body weight.
Mm.
The shoe weighs 2 kilos. The thickness of the sole, like I hand this thing, it's amazing. It's huge. And I hand this to parents. I explain the difference between the shoes and say, 20 kilos is this, it's the same as me at my body weight doing in this shoe.
Mm.
That's what your kids wear to school. Okay. But if we lift that heel up for long enough, what happens to our calf Achilles?
Shorten.
What do we treat all day, every day in the clinic in all three of our professions? Short, tight calves.
Yeah. Mm. All the time.
Yeah. All the time. Okay. So you're 60 hours a week shortening your calf muscle. And we've been generous saying that it's only like 14, 15 mils. There's some that are higher, and then women's shoes, unfortunately, are even worse a lot of the time. Is that we're shortening it for 60 hours a week, and then we expect the feet and the legs to be Formula One race machines when it comes to running.
Yeah.
5 hours a week.
But I'll stretch it for 20 seconds. It'll be fine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you told me to stretch, and I did. I tried at least once. So work shoes for me are more important than running shoes.
Yeah.
That sounds silly, but it's the amount of time. So I deal with feet. Now, if you ask most podiatrists how many joints are in a foot, they don't know.
Like 33.
Yeah, good man.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. And but they know bones. How many bones, they know how many this, so there's 26 bones, but there's 33 joints.
Yeah.
Now I focus on the joints because joints are in the human body for one reason alone. Starts with M, it's kind of in the name of your clinic.
Movement,
right?
I should know this.
Look at my shirt.
Physiotherapy?
I'm pointing at it. Okay, so joints are in the body for one reason, which is movement. There are 33 joints in each foot. How much movement do you think there should be in each foot?
Plenty.
They are literally designed to be four-wheel drives for the human body.
So why the fuck are we told that pronation's a bad thing?
What is pronation?
Oh, my God.
What is pronation?
Well, we're talking subtalar, we're talking rear foot.
Nah, let's not get fancy. All that stuff. One cares about fancy. Pronation is a movement. Pronation is a movement.
Rolling in is what
pronation is a movement. Flexion, extension's a movement.
Yeah.
Pronation's a movement, okay? A movement that makes billions of dollars every single year.
Yeah.
Right?
A normal movement that's
billions of dollars. Yes. The opposite of pronation, supination. Mm. Good. Flexion, extension, pronation, supination. Pronation's a movement. Feet are designed to roll in.
Yeah.
feet are designed to bend and twist in every direction because, crazy secret, the world's not flat.
No.
No. Oh. Well, okay, there's a movement out there. could still
debatable, anyway, debatable. Right.
So the world's not flat. So when your feet contact the ground, their first job is to adapt. Adapt to the ground underneath you,
yeah,
which could be anything, okay? And adapt to you. You're a big, tall, vertical human. Relative to your foot, we're all tall. I know my friends tell me I'm short, but okay, sorry, nobody can see that. All right, is that relative to our height, our feet are very, very short in length, okay? So our body, we move left, right, up, down, anywhere. On top of this foot, we've got 33 joints to adapt and move. Now, if your feet are stiff, where does all the load go?
Elsewhere.
Yeah, further up. So pass me your foot, and no one can see this, but I'm just going to grab your foot.
Cool.
The one without the wall.
Yeah, his foot. Yeah, don't touch the other one.
Okay, so we've got this four-wheel drive that can bend, twist, and move all over the place. But then we're like, no, no, no. We're going to hold this stiff. Where does it all go?
Do that again.
All right.
I'm going to film it and put this on Instagram.
Okay, so we've got a foot that can bend, twist, and move all over the place. There's your four-wheel drive. Ground's uneven, not a problem.
Yeah.
Okay? Moving around. Now we go and give you support because that's what you need, you dysfunctional human. Keep an eye on your actual knee there. Now anything uneven is going to go up through the body.
Yeah.
Because you no longer have any adaptation down this end.
Yeah.
If you wear a ski boot, do you break your foot?
No.
You break your knee. Or knee. High tibia.
Yeah, ACL. Okay? Yeah.
So the more we support the joints and the feet, the more stress we add elsewhere. Right? So first job of the human foot is to adapt to the ground. It's got to be flexible and mobile. 33 joints for movement. Pronation is one of those movements. It's a big movement. It's a necessary movement. Now, very often in the podiatry world, people are told they pronate too much. Oh, in the footwear industry as well. You pronate too much.
I've been told
excessive
that.
Pronation.
Yeah. I've been told that too.
How much is too much?
Yeah, how do they know?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Like, how do they know?
That's right. Because I've got videos of people who are running barefoot and they pronate a huge amount. And when I put a freeze frame on it, it looks like all those pictures that sell orthotics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see that ankle's rolled in so far.
So misaligned, right?
Oh, misaligned, yes. And remember that you can get earaches from that too.
Yeah.
Right up through the body. Right, so, but then when I show...
There's like a lot of sarcasm going on.
When I show the video in slow motion, what you see is that that pronation is actually loading and springing straight back out.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so it's actually very, very healthy.
It's suspension.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
It's like your foot... If you pronate in... And then spring back up out of that. That's literally you.
It's beautiful.
It's your own suspension on the ground.
Yep. So let's go to cars.
Why would you block that?
Yeah.
Why would you put a rigid orthotic underneath that, get rid of your suspension and expect to have zero suspension driving along the road? Like, it makes no sense.
So cars are the best analogy. You got springs in a car. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. If you go down a steep driveway and you bottom out, clunk.
Yeah.
It hurts. You can feel it. All right.
Yeah.
So when a foot rolls in or pronates and literally bottoms out every step, clunk, clunk, clunk. That's an issue because they have no ability to spring out the other side.
Yeah.
Great. We're going to train that.
Yeah.
Or we could just put an orthotic in there and stop them from bottoming out.
So you can give someone a passive external support, which will stop them bottoming out.
Yes.
And, their foot looks a bit better or whatever. Or you could train someone to give themselves their own active support.
Spot on.
Which won't send it further up there.
Now we're going to take the springs out of the car and we're going to drive the same car. Every bump in the road. Let's go off-road. Every bump in the road, every bump is going to sit there and rattle the chassis.
Yeah.
So if we take the springs out of the human body, like the only reason we have an arch is, as you said, suspension. It's literally to load and recoil. So if we take that spring out, now that all goes further up the body.
Mm.
Keeps knee surgeons employed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So question to you. Yep. But I have flat feet.
Yeah.
Good. Are they strong? Are they coordinated?
Yes, that's what I say too. Fuck yeah.
All right, so flat feet.
I don't care what shape your foot is. It's functional, right? That's what I say.
Monkeys can label shape. My little kids can label shapes. They could do it at age 2, maybe 18 months.
Yeah.
They can sit there and grab that Fisher-Price toy with all the windows in it, and you grab the yellow triangle and you try and put it through the wrong shape. You grab the rectangle, try and put it through the triangle. They work this shit out pretty easy. They're just shapes.
Yeah.
Okay. So shapes are shapes. If your foot is flat, I don't care.
Mm.
Height of your arch, I take note. I look at it because it's just mechanics and it's like, cool, that's you. Yeah. But that's like saying I'm short.
Yeah.
Thanks. Great. Awesome. Okay. It doesn't really tell you much about how I move.
Because you're short. And then knee pain, right?
So if you've got flat feet, now I literally had a patient when I was still back in Queensland who had the flattest feet I've ever seen. The only true flat feet I've seen in 17 years, probably 19 years if I really add it up,
yeah.
As flat as a table. Never had pain, she's 42 years old. But everybody who saw her dead, pancake flat feet, were like freaking out. You got to see someone. You got to get that shit fixed. okay? You'll never get in the army, da-da-da-da-da. Okay? Anyway, she came to see me, one too many shoe shops, and her feet were strong and coordinated.
Yeah.
Because they're my categories. If your feet are not strong, they're weak.
Yeah.
If your feet are not coordinated, they're uncoordinated.
Yeah.
I do have to put a category in of deformed because I do see the worst of the worst feet, deformity, da-da-da. Great. But aside from that, if you label a flat foot, how the hell do you fix a flat foot? You can't because it's just a shape.
The only way you can fix that is an orthotic graft.
How do you fix a high arch?
You can't.
Sledgehammer.
What do you do? Yeah.
Because high arch is a problem too. So the big thing is the 33 joints, if they work as a team, with the brain, who's chief and boss, so 33 joints communicate with brain, brain communicates back with muscles.
Mm-hmm.
It's called motor control. Okay, balance, coordination, proprioception. All right, if that works well, what's wrong with the feet? So this 42-year-old with dead flat feet, her feet were great. She had a great appointment. And we spoke a lot about shoes, spoke a lot about her feet. Now, she's still, for the rest of her life, going to have people freak out about her feet.
Yeah.
But she has the comps to be like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Because her feet worked. Now, if you've got a high arch that is weak and uncoordinated, well, I care about that.
You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, exactly right. So it's the function of the foot, the function of the arch. It's got nothing to do with flat feet.
Yeah. Okay. When patients come in to see me, I always ask them, like, what shoes do you wear when you run or whatever? Do you have orthotics? Yeah. Okay, why do you have orthotics? Like, oh, I pronated and I have flat feet.
10 years ago.
And then, I'm going to have a scar on my tongue from biting my tongue every time I hear that because I can't. I will then launch into a one-hour rant in front of that patient.
Good. It's going to make your appointments longer.
So I'm Kayano's and orthotics. Fine, let's go on to why you have knee pain now.
All right, let's go to a big question. What's the widest part of a healthy human foot?
Oh, should be the forefoot or around the medhead. Sure, yeah, that's
toes.
What I say.
Toes.
Toes?
Toes.
Yeah, okay, fair, because the big toe's not pulled in.
Anybody that's got young kids, look at their feet. Then get them to stand up on their toes and watch how wide their toes are.
Yeah.
The toes are the widest part of a healthy human foot. Now grab your ASICs, grab your Brooks, grab your work shoes,
pointy.
And tell me what happens at the end. It's pointy. Now, if I was to tape your fingers together, let's just put your fingers together. You guys driving, don't do it. It's dangerous, okay? Put your fingers together tight. And I'm going to tape them there for the rest of the day. And you're going to do your job, massage therapist, physio.
Makes sense.
Type on a keyboard. How are you going to open a tight jar at home? You're going to spread your fingers.
Yeah.
What are you going to do when you do a push-up?
Spread your fingers.
Okay? Fingers, when they're together, lack stability, lack balance, lack strength. Toes, when they're squished together, lack stability, lack strength. Yet we're going to take 5,000 steps in these pointy shoes where we've lost stability. Oh, hang on. We've got motion control shoes, so that'll be fine. Now, literally, your big toe and your big toe joint, those two big suckers there, they are your balance and stability in your feet and your strength, okay? And if your big toe points straight ahead, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Just like when your car tires and your car points straight ahead, it drives pretty efficient. You put your car tires on a bit crooked and put the accelerator down, you'll still go.
Yeah.
You put the car tires on more crooked, it just becomes harder and harder and you're going to wear things out quicker. As soon as we move your big toe across towards your second toe, your arch loses all its stability and then it actually collapses.
Yeah.
As your arch collapses, the leg rolls in and all these pronation issues.
Yeah.
And everybody can try this at home. Literally grab your big toe and pull it across towards the middle of your body. Pull it away from the direction it's probably going, okay? Pull it across there and see what happens in your arch and how much stronger and tighter it is.
Yeah.
Then go and look at your running shoes and tell me, why do these shoe companies that do all this research with all this fancy technology in their shoes, why do they still make them pointy?
Fashion.
Exactly.
Bullshit.
But it's absolute bullshit because, and this is my absolute pet hate, I don't care about support, cushion, all that stuff in shoes. Of course I do. But if a shoe is pointy at the front, you've lost all integrity of what the foot can be and should be.
Yeah.
In your work shoes and in your running shoes.
Yeah.
And all I want to know, and I asked ASICS about 18 months ago when all their shoes actually became more tapered. And all these people started coming in with 4-foot issues that didn't happen before in their old ASICS, Kayanos and whatever else they were running in. And all of the new shoes have actually pulled in more. So what in their research have they found that squishy toes work better than toes that can actually spread?
What did they say?
Oh, they didn't reply.
Oh, they didn't reply.
I don't get their medical newsletter anymore, but I'm not, that could be coincidence.
So what's the real life practical solution?
Yeah, what if I work an office job, I have my shoes that I have to wear for work?
What shoes do you have to wear for work?
I don't know. There's jobs that have a certain, like, let's say part of PPE.
I haven't seen a uniform policy delivered to me from anyone yet. Most of it's implied.
Mm, right.
Now, let's just talk males for a moment. It is actually not that hard to find it. Well, it is hard, but I know where you can get them. Find shoes that are leather, flat on the ground, great shape at the toes.
Oh, yeah.
People try them on in my clinic all the time, and they're the most comfy shoes. They actually legit look great.
Vivos?
Yeah.
Vivo and Lems.
The Gobi. The Lems looks like a school shoe. Okay, I'll admit that. Fair. All right. Not the other Lem shoes I love to bits, but their black leather ones look like a school shoe.
Yeah, they do. Right?
But the Vivo Gobi and then their handmade, hand-stitched ones in Portugal, which are hard. You can't get them in Australia anymore. But they are legit awesome shoes.
Yeah.
But people put them on and they go, oh, they feel good. They look down and freak the hell out.
Because they look different.
Oh, they're so big. Because they're not pointy at the front. I've had people who are literally at the top of their companies tell me that they're worried about what their colleagues will say.
Yeah.
Yet their entire problem are the R.M. Williams boots they're wearing. And again, they're wearing them for 60 hours a week. I've got a solution for you. You're paying me good money. And they're like, no, I don't think I can do it. Fashion. Cool. See you in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Right? With the same problem. So for males, it's a lot easier. Okay. Now let's go work boots, males or females. That sucks.
Yeah.
No solution there. I have no solution for that. I know some companies that are trying with more minimalist shoes. Trouble is that when there's not a lot of shoe, it's hard to put a steel cap at the front of it.
Yeah. Fair.
But they're trying, okay? So I've got roofers who are on the roof in steel caps. The fuck is going to land on your toe when you're on the roof of a building, building a house? And if it is a meteorite, your steel caps aren't saving you, okay? So there's situations where it's just ridiculous, but they've got rules across the board. I've had people who are mopping floors in the council chambers, and they've got to wear steel caps because everybody has to wear them.
Yeah.
They're mopping floors. Like, the mop handle won't hurt. Now, I train barefoot in the gym pretty much every single day, and I put shoes on for very few things that my feet need them, and I've never dropped a weight on my foot because you know where your feet are.
Yeah. But even if I wear gym shoes, drop a weight on your foot.
Yeah.
It's still going to hurt.
Drop exactly 20 right. kilos on your Nike Metcon, it'll still hurt.
Yeah. Okay, so you're going into a gym, and you're going to learn how to squat. You got 33 joints at the end of your leg connecting you to the ground, yet they're hidden in shoes.
Yeah.
And we're going to teach you how to squat.
Yeah.
What those 33 joints do will influence your squat dramatically.
Yeah.
Yet we're going to have you squat in marshmallows.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Because in most gyms, you need to wear shoes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we're going to go into a gym. We're going to sit there and say, you know, we want awesome abs, six-pack abs. We want an awesome butt. What about the person that goes in and says, I want jacked feet? It's 20 muscles in each foot, right? 33 joints. What if we go in and say, I want jacked feet? I mean, even if they ask, you know, most practitioners, how do I strengthen my feet? Well, fuck, I don't know how to do that. And my profession will argue that you can't. And that's what changed my whole career. I started thinking, righto, I don't wear the knee brace, the plaster cast, the sling, all the injuries that I've had over the years with rugby. I don't wear any of them anymore. And I've rehabbed those joints with the help of awesome practitioners to the point where they're great, better than they were before. Why the hell am I personally still wearing orthotics? Because it solved my pain. And so this happened when I was literally trying to make myself orthotics again. And I was like, why can't I actually fix my feet? What is different with the tissue in your feet, the muscles, bones, joints, and tendons to the rest of the body? You know the answer?
Nothing.
There is nothing. So they respond to the same principles of use it or lose it, progressive overload. And let's just call it at that, okay? Yeah, 100%. Use it or lose it, progressive overload. Very, very simple. So when healthy kids are forced to wear stiff, rigid shoes that are high heels at a school at age 5, that's barbaric. Imagine a physio put in knee braces on every kid in school to prevent knee arthritis.
Exactly.
Put every arm in a sling as prevention. You get kicked out of profession.
Put a neck collar on someone on a kid in case they fall out of a tree.
That's probably actually good with the amount of phones and texting and stuff these days.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the neck is robust. We can look at a phone.
Yeah, exactly. So putting healthy joints, healthy feet in supportive shoes is literally barbaric.
Yeah.
Okay. And it can only lead to one thing, which is weak feet.
Yeah.
Right? Which keeps me employed. So supportive shoes are not for healthy feet. We can talk black and blue about what adults need to do because it's a long way back. And it's not easy because we've been in this stuff for so long. But kids do not need supportive shoes. Feet are healthy. Yes, I see exceptions in my clinic. No, your kid's not an exception. Their feet are supposed to be flat when they're young.
Yeah.
Their feet are supposed to roll in. They're fine. Okay. What we want is that if we give those kids support, why would their own muscles actually do the job?
Exactly. They become lazy and complacent muscles.
So my huge passion is taking the generation before and sitting there saying, righto, my three girls, they got a massive head start. because they're not going to wear the shitty shoes that I wore. And my parents were awesome. They put me in Clark's shoes because that was the education.
Yeah.
Didn't matter whether they could afford or not. They did the best they could for us. And they made sure our feet were looked after. The education is wrong. Okay. There is no other joints in the body that we immobilize when healthy.
Yeah.
None. Zip. Zero.
Mm.
Okay. So coming back to the work stuff, ridiculously hard in a lot of professions. Now let's just talk women.
Mm.
What's the difference between a male and a female foot? Anatomically, physiologically.
Same amount of bones, joints.
It's exact same.
Yeah.
They're no different as kids. They're no different through school. Then it starts to become different because of shoes. So when a female is going for an interview at a corporate job compared to a male, it's very, very hard to wear the shoes that I would recommend for that male.
Yeah.
That sucks. Okay. Because there is no difference between a male and a female foot, but expectations in society are very different. So shoes is the hardest part of my job. I can work with feet. I can work with any human that comes in with me.
Mm.
And I've worked to the point where my clinic is full of motivated patients.
Yeah.
I think you guys will agree. And when I teach at my workshops, other practitioners often say, oh, my patients don't do homework. They don't do their exercise. I'm like, you got the wrong patients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you can't help who comes through your door.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. So you mold your clinic like this place here and you attract a certain clientele. Word of mouth spreads, all the rest of that. So my clients are really motivated and they do the work. They love having an option to strengthen their feet.
Yeah.
Whereas before, they were just told their feet are weak, they roll in too much, they need orthotics. I'm like, what if we train them? Yeah. Or the classic, the 24-year-old comes in and he's like, I need new orthotics. I'm like, what for? I've got weak ankles. That's and I look at him and I say, what if we strengthen them? And he looks at me. First time he actually gives a shit about what I'm saying because he just wanted to roll in, get his new orthotics, and off he goes. And because he's had them since he was 13.
Yeah.
It's probably hypermobile. Maybe at one point he actually needed some help somewhere there.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not always wrong. Definitely not always wrong. But he's just rolling through that system. I said, what if we strengthen them? All of a sudden he goes, what do you mean? We could do that? I'm like, shit, yeah. And we get to a point where you don't need your orthotics. So for me, the question I ask with orthotics is not whether they're right or wrong. What is the plan to get out of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on that, if you have a runner who wears a stability shoe plus or minus an orthotic and they're listening to this and go, oh, that sounds pretty good. If they go and do all their running barefoot or in a quite a minimal shoe with a little bit of rubber underneath it, that won't be smooth sailing.
Nope.
What's your top tip?
Don't do it.
Don't do what?
don't make that jump. Don't make that change. Okay, so I hate plastic orthotics. If your orthotic is hard and rigid, your arch can't do its job.
Mm,
yeah. You got a big problem, okay? When I do make orthotics, and I absolutely do still make orthotics, they're made out of latex. Think pillow, think mattress, think this bed here. They're as soft as anything.
Yeah.
All I want to do if, when your body can't do the job or when it's fatigued is decelerate, give you some assistance in that arch, okay, so you don't hit end range like that car clunking every time it goes down a driveway. If we bottom out every time, problem. So when I make an orthotic, my rule is to do the least amount humanly possible and for the patient to wear them the least amount possible, okay? So if we do need to make an orthotic or if someone comes in with really rigid orthotic supportive shoes, been in them forever, and they want to run barefoot, I'll say, why?
Mm.
You can't even walk barefoot.
Yeah.
Okay. So my biggest thing is that we run the way we walk, the way we stand.
Yeah.
So we all focus on the running, but I actually focus on the standing first. If you stand like shit, you will run like shit because we're creatures of habit.
Yeah.
You stand with your feet turned out like a duck, hunched over like you're still at your desk. That's what you will do 500 meters into your run.
Yeah.
No matter how many cues we give about running tall and all the rest of that, when we're fatigued, we become what we were. Yeah. And I used to be feet out like a duck.
Mm.
That's how I ran. Okay. So teach someone how to stand. Teach them the importance of it, teach them how to walk, then I can teach them how to run. And again, their running shoes become the last thing I want to change. So I'm going to get them into minimalist shoes for work. That's how I do it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Long answer, but I like those. But minimalist shoes for work. There are 24 hours in a day and there are 23 hours that you're not running. That is where you get strong, healthy feet.
Yeah.
Not the 1 hour you're running in your five-finger shoes, okay? You get strong, healthy feet the 23 hours a day you're not running.
Mm.
Think about how many steps you take. I don't care if you've got a desk job. Thousands of steps every day. Every step is an opportunity to have your entire body weight on top of your foot.
Hmm.
That's pretty awesome. So if your feet work well, now we've just got to rewire, reprogram, okay, because most feet don't work well. Just like when your arm comes out of a sling, it doesn't work well. It doesn't mean it's useless. It means we've got to train it, OK? Okay. So if we can reprogram that foot to do its job right, and then you take thousands of steps today with a healthy foot, why the hell would we want to lock up that foot when we've actually trained it to work well?
Yeah.
So we need feet that work. Then we need to wear shoes that allow them to work. That's your workout. No, you don't have to go to the gym and ask for jacked feet and do arch curls with your arch, okay? Is we need to reprogram the feet and then literally just use them.
Yeah.
But taking off your shoes and your orthotics and just going for a walk or run doesn't solve the problem.
Hmm.
I had a gentleman come and see me who literally runs barefoot in Darwin. And if he listens to this, he knows he's a legend. He's awesome. He's a great guy. But he came to see me from all the way from Darwin. He runs barefoot in Darwin, and he ran all the time barefoot except the middle of summer and the middle of the day.
Fair.
Yeah, right?
Fair.
But he'd run trail as well, barefoot. Oh, but both Achilles were playing up.
Mm.
He couldn't work out why. And when he came to see me, there was one part of his foot, only one part, that wasn't complete, hard, tough leather. He had the toughest feet I'd ever, ever come across. Tough.
Yeah.
But there was a big gap right underneath his big toe joint.
Yeah.
So I said, your big toe joint is your balance, your stability, and your strength. So whilst he got his feet incredibly tough and he was a weapon of a human, he walked barefoot, he lived barefoot, his stand-up workstation, this wasn't a fast transition, it was a weapon. In the gym, the stuff he did was phenomenal. But he didn't rewire and reprogram to get that big toe joint to be chief and boss and do the job.
Mm.
So that's all we did. Bit of manual therapy on the calves, which I had to find someone in Darwin just to help him out, and get that on the straight and narrow just to get things going in the right direction there, just to unglue some sticky stuff.
Mm.
But otherwise, we just had to reprogram, rewire. So you can make your feet tough by taking your shoes off, just like you can squat heavier weight, even if you're squatting like shit.
Mm. Yeah.
But if you can reprogram and actually train a pattern. Now, one of my very first things is that if you can't stand on one foot comfortably, easily, on the spot, why the fuck are you running on that thing? And so many runners come in, I ask them to stand on one foot and they cannot to save their life. But they run 40 Ks a week. What do you think's happening underneath you when you're on one foot every single step with 2.5 times body weight? Less if you run well and quiet, just so you know. Okay. So there's prerequisites that if you can't do that, yes, you're a good athlete. Yes, your heart and lungs are good, but you keep getting stress fractures.
Mm.
You keep trying to find the magic shoe, magic orthotic. The power of feet, the power of feet to work with the rest of the body is enormous.
Yeah. Why do we block it with EVA foam?
Mate.
New updated technologies.
66 joints of untapped potential.
Mm. Yeah, but, you know, Nike can make me run a sub-2-hour marathon.
Yeah.
So I'll buy that shoe.
Yeah, Nike will make you 4% faster. Doing this will make you how much percent less injured?
That's the thing is when we talk about elite is different to everybody else.
Yeah.
Right, the world record for the marathon at the moment, 2:01.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. What does that break down per 100 meters? Under 18 seconds.
Yeah.
So 17 point something per 100 meters. I can run that for 100 meters, not a problem.
Yeah.
I can do it twice.
Yeah.
Wow. No, I could do four. I'm good. 420 times plus change. So when we look at elite marathon runners, they are long distance sprinters. Their mechanics are long-distance sprinters. So when we break down our lovely YouTube of the elite runners, Kipchoge, or we get Mo Farah, we get any of them, Gabriel Selassie, and we sit there, and that's what a lot of education is on running, and they're looking at the mechanics of this long-distance runner, and they're giving everybody hip drive drills. It's one of my pet hates, is that when we're running long distance, hip drive drills lead to overstride. If we run fast and we've got a good runner, that's different.
Yeah.
Very different. But our regular marathon runner who's doing, 3.5 to 4 to 5 hour marathons. So we're running 30 to 45 seconds per 100 meters.
Yeah.
The mechanics of 30 to 45 seconds per 100 compared to 18 to 20 seconds per 100 are completely different.
Yeah.
Very different. And so comparing the elite to the Joe Blow, even the good Joe Blows, even the really dedicated Joe Blows, no, it's different. So we've actually got to approach it differently and look at the elite at being phenomenal.
Mm.
But elite sport in general is not about health.
No,
it's about performance. Yeah. And, whatever we've got to sacrifice along the way to reach our goal, that's fine. It's about performance. And that's a big mistake in the running world too, is trying to emulate those who are at the top of the game.
Mm.
Whilst you've got a 60-hour week job, 3 kids, no sleep at night, stress to the eyeballs, eating like crap,
mm-hmm.
and wonder why you get injured. Oh, it's my running program.
It always is.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit that we can always tap into with runners. Mm. And the first one's sleep, but that's not sexy and that doesn't sell. But sleep's the most important thing for recovery, because if you recover from every single run that you do, I don't care if you run 10 times a day, as long as you recover between runs.
You're fresh, yeah. Fresh and ready to go.
Yeah. And recovery is not soreness is not a measure of recovery.
No.
And so if someone recovers, literally recovers from every single run, how can they get an overuse injury?
You can't, because you can't overuse it if you recover.
That's exactly right. So recovery, so I tell the runner that when you actually finish and stop the watch on your run, you haven't stopped anything. You've just started recovery.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to put in your body food-wise, hydration-wise? What are you going to do sleep-wise, movement-wise in the next 23 hours so that if you want to run tomorrow, you're fine?
Mm.
So the running shoe, I'll never solve that. Everyone wants to know what shoe to run in. That's on Instagram all the time or any social media. What shoe is best for this? What shoe is best for this? I'm like, it's not the shoe. It's everything else.
What shoe will be most effective at covering up your other inefficiencies?
For this distance on this day of the week when the sky is overcast.
Yeah.
That's the New Balance, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, or the Brooks, whatever.
But only on a 24-degree day.
Yes, yes. And did we get your pronation angle right? So, yeah, shoes are everything. But bottom line is we have just untapped potential in those feet. And what we want to do is put Formula One race machines, feet, inside a shoe. Not try and buy the shoe, as you just said, to cover up all our problems.
Yeah.
So I like to say it's not about the shoe, it's about what's in the shoe.
Mm.
Imagine a gymnast with weak shoulders, a weightlifter with weak legs. Wouldn't happen.
No.
What about a runner with weak feet?
Everyone.
All the time. All the time. So instead of blaming our program, instead of blaming our shoes, mate, if we can tap into what we actually own, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, 100%.
And again, if we go back to that cadence thing, we're born with so much in our body that's designed to be able to run, to be able to move well. And just our Western world obviously takes a lot of that away through shoes, through sitting, through lifestyle.
So for the person listening to this who's like, cool, I'm like, I reckon in my workplace, I can actually get a shoe that's shaped like my foot,
yep.
You know, one of those Vivo ones or whatever it might be. So cool, I'll purchase them. There's no barriers there. So for them, what do? They just wear them and that's it?
Nope. Got to retrain them.
Yeah.
So let's go with some very basics. Standing on one foot. We do that every time when we walk.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just go to raw base. If you can't stand on one foot, we got work to do.
Yeah.
So let's do that. Let's do some variations. I love to shift a weight from side to side on the body.
Yeah.
Transfer that weight over. You know, a balance pad of any sort. Not a wobble board. Wobble board's a circus trick. Okay, is that I like something that just changes what's underneath us just enough.
Yeah, okay? And having your foot intrinsics and your ankle muscles, we'll just call them ankle muscles, able to like keep your body upright.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Then so we stand on one leg, eyes closed. Yeah. All right. You want to run long distance. If you can't stand on one leg with your eyes closed for 10 seconds consistently, and I use that word instead of comfortably. All right. Eyes closed shouldn't be easy. Shouldn't be easy. But if you can't do that, I'm going to sit there and say, well, your motor control's not quite up to where we want it to be. Let's fix that first. Second one, though, if you come up onto the balls of your feet and balance, I want to see what your big toe and big toe joint do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So if you come up on the balls of your feet and you're wobbly, your big toe joint's not engaged with the ground. So all I'm going to do is sit there.
Paddy's trying here.
I'm trying right now.
He's not bad. He looks more.
How am I doing?
Good. So come back down. All right, so now I want you to spend 5 seconds slowly coming up onto the balls of your feet, and your focus point is your big toe joint.
So I'm standing, I'm not balancing on anything.
Nope.
And over the course of 5 seconds, I'm going to raise
slowly
up.
Slowly rise in. And if your big toe leaves the ground, no rep. Hold for five. And lower, smooth and controlled for five. Smooth and controlled. Wait till you feel that carpet. Ooh, a little drop at the end.
Yeah, okay. Balance backwards there.
Absolutely. Oh, that's because you didn't have heel pitch from your shoe.
I do.
Sorry. Okay, so.
String up. I can't talk and do this at the same time.
I call the exercise fives.
Yeah.
Now, it's called Strong Feet Famous Fives, so, you know, you got to trademark to do that quite.
Yeah.
Okay, call it fives. Is that you spend 5 seconds slowly coming up onto the balls of the feet, hold for 5 seconds, lower for 5 seconds, and the big toe joint have to control the movement the whole way.
Mm.
And if you're wobbly there on the spot, again, what do you think is happening underneath you when you walk and run? I've got a force plate in my clinic. You've got one on your treadmill. I've got one in my clinic people walk across. Mm. And very, very often, very few times is that first big toe joint, the chief and boss. Now, just have a look at your own foot and look how big and chunky that thing is.
Yeah.
Look at the twigs next to it, the second, third, fourth, and fifth toe. Mm-hmm. That big toe is everything. Even if you don't trust me, just look at the size of it.
Yeah.
So when you're walking, you need that sucker to work. You can't think about it 5,000 times a day when you walk.
So you've reprogrammed that.
Yes. So Fives exercise is saying, righto, we need to be able to do it standing here, because if you're wobbly here with that big toe, I know you're wobbly when you run. So we need to have it before we actually run. So reprogram, rewire, literally single leg standing, the Fives exercise. There's heaps more, but that's where I start.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I'll get into the hops. So bunny hops, which is just light, very, very light. And it's all to do with just elasticity.
Yeah.
And it's just on the spot. Heels touch very, very gently on the ground.
Mm.
And it's not a jump. It's just a natural little recoil on two feet, like we're skipping without a rope.
Yeah.
Now, there's no such thing as skipping in my world. It's bunny hops with a rope.
Yeah.
Okay, because we've got bunny hops, but then you put a skipping rope in someone's hand and they look like they're having a fit. And they're trying to get a stress fracture within 30 seconds by smashing the ground. So we've got this lovely little spring, just boom, boom, boom. Toes come off the ground just a tiny bit. Heels touch light. We're training arch through Achilles calf to work as a team.
Mm.
We want that plantar fascia and that Achilles particularly to be elastic.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing with those two structures, they're strong as hell, but when we're actually running, when we're skipping, those guys become elastic if we run well. If we slam the ground with an overstriding slow cadence, they don't.
Yeah.
Now, if you can tap into your Achilles tendon and your plantar fascia to give you some elastic return, high tensile elastic return, it's free.
Yeah.
Almost cheating. Except you're born with it, and we all are. So we're doing that, and then we're going to move into single bunny hops. Now, if you can't do single leg hopping on the spot, that's just light and springy, what the hell's going to happen when you run 5Ks?
I see that all the time. Literally all the time. Yeah. I get someone to say, cool, just hop on the ground. And it's like they're trying to break the tiles in the clinic with their feet.
So yes.
If you can't hop, how are you going to try and run 10K tomorrow?
Spot on.
I just don't understand. And the other people who try and break through the tiles in the clinic with their heel every time they land. It's like, you've got no
But when they walk, they do it too.
Yeah.
So you have to walk quietly before you can run quietly. So when you're walking, I just tell people, when you're walking, you've got to be quiet and smooth. Because if you tell someone to walk quietly, they look like a burglar. Creeping along, da-da-da-da. I'm like, no, smooth, okay? You've got to be free-flowing because, again, walking is high repetition.
Yeah.
And when you're sitting there walking heavy, and everyone sits there when I say it in the room because there's, there's husband or there's daughter, son. They all look at one person who's the elephant, okay?
Yeah.
Slamming along on the floorboards. And it's like, no, if you walk quiet and smooth, think about the reduced impact through your joints. Again, it's not just the running impact. It's the walking impact as well. Walking is lower per step, but the actual volume of steps is much higher through a lifetime.
Yeah.
And so if you're walking heavy, all you see through the actual calves and knees, vibration. Just vibration. Every time it lands, it's like boom, boom. And the ground itself is vibrating, right? It's got nothing to do with body weight or anything else. Is that we're designed as we walk with our feet literally to glance and roll.
Yeah.
Mm.
If we have a look at our heels, our naked heels, they're rounded. And the crazy concept is that round things roll. Sharp things like bricks don't roll. Now go look at your running shoes again. Now, what percent of running shoes are never actually running?
What percentage of running shoes
will never be running?
I don't know.
It's crazy. Like 80% up there, because they're Lorna Jane Coffin shoes.
Yeah.
Okay. They're walking shoes, right? So most running shoes bought out on the market won't actually be running. It's not good or bad, just a fact. So when we walk heel first, as we should.
Mm.
But the outer corner of all those shoes is sharp, is 90 degrees, often flared out to the side, which is another issue because it actually throws things faster into that whole pronation thing, okay? So we've got this sharp corner. Every time your heel contacts the ground, it goes clunk, thud, clunk, thud, clunk, thud. There's a pattern. Now when we go and actually run, how are we going to overcome that clunk, thud? By running on our toes?
Mm.
So the one thing I never teach is which part of your foot contacts the ground first.
Yeah.
Which part is it? That freckle? That toe? That? The part of your foot that contacts the ground first when you run changes.
Mm.
But if you tell someone to be a midfoot or a forefoot runner, they will hit the midfoot or the forefoot constantly. Boom, 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 boom. And they'll smash the ground heavier to make sure they get that part of the foot. Again, you can see overstriders who are literally leaning back to make sure they contact with their toes first. Okay. So the part of your foot will contact the ground first with slope, uphill, downhill, camber, side to side of the road, terrain, but mostly speed.
Yeah.
Mostly speed. The slower I run, the further back my foot is that it contacts the ground first. If I run long enough and slow enough or I'm on a recovery piece, is that it's almost flat-footed.
Mm-hmm.
Very often how toddlers run, use the entire foot.
Yeah.
And then as I'm going faster, the contact point will be further up the foot. But unless I'm sprinting, my heel will touch the ground every single step. Mm. yeah. unless I'm sprinting. And I've actually worked with quite a few, I call them heel glances.
Mm.
And they actually run really efficient.
Yeah.
Because their contact point is very much underneath the hips or close to, very close to under the hips. And their body is actually over the top of their foot by the time their heel glances
yeah.
the ground. And same concept as walking. Most people overstride when they walk. Got to go that way. Got to reach out in front.
Yeah.
And it's clunk, clunk, clunk. Yeah. Okay. So naked heels designed to glance and roll when we walk. Shoes make it go clunk and thunk.
Yeah.
And you'll hear that when you're in shoes. Mm.
Yeah. Especially your stiff, like.
Yeah.
Your stiff Brooks, your stiff Asics, whatever
it might be. Absolutely. Or work shoes again. Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Like the contact and thud.
Yep. Yeah.
But you, even when you see those people on the force plate, you see the double spike.
Yes. Yes.
And people don't realize there is actually a double force going through.
Yeah.
Instead of if you see someone barefoot or that has adequate technique, it is one rounded spike, not an Everest peak.
So if I was to say anything on that, going back a little bit, retraining, standing on one leg, doing the fives with the big toe joint control. That's everything. Big toe joint. Bunny hops, like you're skipping without a rope, and then get into single leg bunny hops, and it should just be light and springy. Effortless. You don't have to do them for hours. I actually get people just doing for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Three times a minute. 10 on, 10 off, 10 on, 10 off, 10 on. Happy days.
Done. Yeah.
Yep. Do it again. Do it again. Repeat all through the day.
Yeah.
I say if people around your house or office don't notice you doing bunny hops or standing on one leg, you haven't done it enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it's those sort of things have to be done barefoot.
Yeah.
Have to be done barefoot. Again, we want to train these things at the end of the legs to be like awesome. So then we can stick them in a shoe. Then we want just enough shoe to work with our foot.
Yeah.
Just enough shoe. The shoe has to be the shape of the foot, and I realize I've just ruled out 99% of shoes.
Yeah.
But we're all still buying those pointy shoes and not complaining. Mm. We might bitch and moan, but the companies will keep making them as long as we buy them. But even if every runner boycotted, again, if 80% of shoes are being worn not running, ASICS still won't change.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Still won't change. Imagine if some of these other brands that make foot-shaped shoes made some real, put a real dent in the market. Do you think Nike would just make the same shoe?
Nah.
Or buy them out, you know, if there was a real dent in the market. So there's not. What the majority do is not necessarily what you want to do as an individual.
Mm.
Okay. Just because everyone's eating Maccas at lunch, does that mean you should?
I don't
probably, know. Probably. Yeah. Just fall in with the crowd. Okay. So working on the feet to work well. Then with running, we want a shoe that does just enough for your feet to help them out.
Yeah.
For the mileage you're doing.
Mm.
For the fatigue level that sets in. Now, I would suggest that the earlier the fatigue sets in, well, if you were doing squats or deadlifts, you should probably stop and probably would.
Yeah.
But with running, no, I'm doing 20 today.
Keep going.
Yeah, and my technique basically fell to crap at 5. 15 to go. 15,000 impacts with the ground under fatigue. Okay. So if we build up and overload properly, is that we should actually still be able to functional with our own body for as long as we want to run.
Yeah.
If we did it right.
Yeah.
And we didn't have jobs and we didn't have families and we didn't have all the other pressures of life that take away from the fact that we spend as much time as we can running and then we quickly finish our run, whip our shoes off, jump in the shower, grab a coffee on the fly, go sit on a train, go sit at work all day. And again, the whole recovery of that is terrible.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah.
Like, I always tell people that go, training, I want to train like an athlete. I'm like, you're going to train like an athlete if you recover like an athlete. There's you can't train like Mo Farah and expect to have a normal day job and a family.
Yeah.
Mm. They don't work together.
This is fascinating for me because I look at the runner running. I look at how they train. I look at what they do, but I don't really look at what they do at work. Mm. So this is really interesting for me because, you know, I look at you doing the thing that causes you discomfort.
Spot on.
And I don't often consider the other 16 hours a day when your head is into a laptop.
Yep.
So it's really
and the shoes. The shoes are the big one for that. Especially
for like a running injury.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. So accumulated time in shoes is what counts. Because then people say, I'm just sitting at a desk all day. Do the shoes really matter? Yes. 60 hours matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, squish your fingers together for 60 hours. They're not just going to spring back and be awesome. So if your toes are held together for 60 hours, it matters.
Yeah.
Really matters. So the shoes we wear to work is more important than the shoes we run in terms of me being able to improve someone forever.
Yeah.
And then if we've got feet working really well and we actually use those 60 hours at work to help your feet get stronger, man, that's unreal.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be at work anyway. And if your feet are actually working, because even if you sit at the desk, you can still take a couple of thousand steps between getting to work, walking around the office, doing bits and pieces. Yeah. You check your watch late and you're clocked up 4,000. Happy days. And so if you can do that in shoes that allow your feet to work, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's free strength training for your feet.
A recent study came out showing that wearing minimalist shoes strengthened feet as much as doing foot strengthening exercises.
Yeah.
So maybe just wearing minimalist shoes is the way to go because people, again, inherently lazy and don't do their exercises. But again, I'll equate that to the person who does squats every day with poor technique will get stronger. So for me, again, it's still combine both.
Yeah.
Train the feet with the exercise to do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take long in terms of how many minutes a day you do stuff. It doesn't take long, okay? Train your feet to do a better job. Wear shoes that allow them to do a better job. Feet are awesome. They'll do the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet.
That's like any of my patients will know. That quite often my patient will remark on a day that I do wear shoes. Like, oh, you're wearing shoes now. Like, what's wrong? So the last three or four weeks I have been wearing shoes because I've had one in a moon boot for a while and I've just kind of been a bit sensitive to impact on my sore foot the last couple of weeks. But prior to that.
I reckon that's here in this clinic. Nobody wears shoes.
Well, there's a nice carpet.
That's an overstatement.
But then I do say to people, like, I'm quite lucky that my work environment allows me to not wear shoes.
Yeah,
like, it would be great if other people could also not wear shoes at work.
So my daughter's kindergarten, twins in kindergarten, they've got a reward system. When they get 25 stamps, they've got choices of rewards. One of them is to take shoes off for the day in the classroom.
Oh.
So I spin that and say, right on, shoes off is a reward. Why don't we flip that the other way and say shoes on is a punishment?
Yeah.
So if shoes off is such a treat and awesome, let's sit there and say, right, Johnny, you little turd, put your shoes on for the afternoon. Yeah. What? Really?
Yeah.
So for me, it'd be, all right, let's put shoes off all the time in class.
Yeah.
What do I mean, shoes? Oh, they got scissors, they could hurt themselves.
Yeah, but again, they also have eyes, they could stick scissors in, so, you know. what you have to pay were protective glasses.
Yeah, you got to learn your lesson somehow.
Look, we are lucky that we work in industries where we think health all the time. We think about improving our clients, but we think about improving ourselves first. And we sit there and we have conversations even like this where we throw back and forth ideas. I'm going to take stuff from you. You take stuff from me. It's great. And so because our brains are so wired to that, it is lucky. We're not in the corporate world looking at financial transactions, the marketplace and da-da-da-da-da. And you know, so much of this world, I don't watch the news. I don't listen to the radio. I don't know what's going on in the world in that class.
I couldn't give a shit.
My kids and my family, my world, I literally, look, judge me if you want, but I don't even know who's in power in our governments and stuff like that. I just don't watch anything like that. But my world is my family, but my world is like health and movement.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be obsessive, but I think about what I can do as I get older. I want to be fit and healthy forever. I don't need to be an elite sportsman, but I want to be healthy forever. And it's not just for my kids to look up to, it's just me.
Yeah.
And so we are on it all the time, whereas our clients are coming in and their struggles in life, their workplace, their everything is different. So we've got to work out, all right, what are the couple of little things that you can do that won't flip your world upside down because that might not happen, that you can actually make that will give you the best result. And again, that's why our approach feed is, all right, what can we do that's very, very simple? Again, everyone wants the quick fix in terms of just in the general world. What's the quick fix? What's the magic shoe? No. Let's do the simple things right. If you can't stand on one foot, what are you going to do when you're 70? Well, you got a wheelie walker, so you'll be fine. And I literally tell patients, if you can stand on one foot, if you can do that fives exercise on the balls of your foot when you're 90, what chance do you have of needing a wheelie walker and having balance issues? So it becomes a training tool, but then for me, it just becomes a daily check-in.
Yeah.
Takes a minute. Happy days. If that's something you did when you brush your teeth, fantastic. Easy. Then if you started to lose it at some point in life, you'd be like, whoa, where's that crazy podiatry dude? I got to go see him. What's wrong? Yeah. Something's happening. And so it's more that people just accept that balance decreases through life. But again, I have fit elite runners who can't balance on one foot, kids who can't, and kids respond super duper quick.
Yeah.
And they love a challenge.
Oh.
No homework. Just a challenge.
Yeah.
And I'll stare him in the face and say, when you come back and see me in 2 weeks, you're going to stand there in my eyes and look and say, look how good I am, Tim. And they do.
Yeah.
They come back in, it's awesome, or balance on the balls of the feet. Mm. So less structured. And again, if we can improve that and get things communicating better, because often those kids are hypermobile, is that, you know, the connections aren't there, they're growing every day, and then they just get labeled as having growing pains and da-da-da. But it's just tissue that's just struggling to keep up. The other part is they're often wearing big, chunky, heavy shoes that don't allow 66 joints to work.
Yeah.
So simple things done right.
Yeah.
That's feet.
That's it.
Repeated thousands of times every single day.
Easy.
How many things haven't we covered yet?
We
never told them what shoe to buy.
That's right. But I think they now know why the shoe is less important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I've got four rules for shoes. Uh-oh. In an ideal world, four rules for shoes, because I'm not shopping with you and the footwear market's a mystery.
Okay? Yeah.
It's a nightmare. All right, so a shoe has to be light.
Yeah.
A shoe needs to be close to the ground.
Yeah.
The less activity doing the shoe, the closer to the ground it should be.
Mm.
Okay. If we put gloves on our hands, we get less coordinated.
Yeah.
Right. Shoe should be light. Shoe should be close to the ground. Shoe should be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
33 joints. If your shoes don't bend, twist, and move, neither do your feet. Use it or lose it. And a shoe should be the shape of a human foot.
Yeah.
Four rules. Dead simple rules. Hard to adhere to a lot of the time. I get that. But the closer you are to those four rules, the better you'll be. There's a bonus fifth rule. Got to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I can't tell you a shoe. I can tell you what's a good shoe. Mm. But until you put it on, I don't know how it feels. Mm. And so you got to trust that feel. Now, most shoes are, of course, bought with our eyes.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. Yeah. Bought with our eyes. We try it on. It doesn't feel great. Put on another shoe that's actually, okay, that feels better. You go back to the original one. Talk yourself into it.
Yeah.
That's what it is out there. Yeah. Nah, it's not too bad. I think it's fine. It's all right. It'll stretch. Yeah. It'll give. Okay. So light, close to the ground, flexible, not sloppy.
Mm.
Flexible, okay, and shape of the human foot. Bonus fifth rule, got to be comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
That's footwear.
You also do a bit of work in the CrossFit field.
Yep.
With like high-end athletes like Tia Claire Toomey, a few others. How are they? Like, I've seen CrossFitters run, and it hurts my eyes.
I love working in that field, and when I finished rugby, I found a CrossFit gym. And once I started doing it, I was like, I filled this void because I enjoyed the teaching of a quality coach, teaching me different movements, finding all my weaknesses that rugby, you know, I got away with. But in terms of CrossFit was awesome for that.
Yeah.
Then I found a little niche in the fact that, again, CrossFitters do run like shit. CrossFitters hate running. What a stupid business plan. Let's teach CrossFitters how to run better. Okay. All right. If you wanted to teach them how to do a muscle up or do something fancy, whether they were strong enough to do it or not, yeah, you'd make heaps of money. Okay. Yeah. So teaching CrossFitters run, I've found that anybody that approaches me to work with them, it's brilliant because they want to learn. And for the most, I don't think I've really run into any CrossFitters that I've had issues with in respect to just as a human being.
Yeah.
In respect to everyone that I've worked with is so appreciative and I love it. Because I can help take them from where they are to somewhere that's very good, where they need to be. And it does, you can't make it like a really crappy runner, an elite runner, in respect to just sit there and do a bit of work and all of a sudden they go to the Olympics.
No.
Okay? But these are amazing athletes. And one of the biggest holes in their game is running.
Mm.
And they hate it. So it's like, right, what do you do inside the gym if you want to learn to Olympic lift? Oh, just snatch every day and throw up as much as they can and see what happens. Okay, is that there is so much technique into all the movements, anything in the CrossFit world when taught well, so much technique into all the movements, and it's constant, it's endless, it's refining.
Yeah.
But with running, even as just a general coach, any of the CrossFit coaches, it's like, all right, out the door, turn around to that blue car up there, back in here.
Yeah.
And whilst they're off for the run, you go and grab a coffee and just rest. There's no coaching cues.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Even when people get on a rower. There's coaching cues. Well, there should be. Okay. So with running, again, if we can teach them to do the simple things right and their running improves, my favorites are the absolute run haters that then tell me I'm actually enjoying this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Because runners who choose to run obviously enjoy it. CrossFitters who want to be good and compete, they have to be able to run so they don't have to enjoy it. But when they come back and tell me I'm actually really enjoying this, I get a little buzz out of that. That's great. Okay.
Good win.
Yeah. Don't have to love it, but they're enjoying doing it because we've made the movement easier for them. And they actually feel better at it. They don't suck at it. And again, it's usually the simple things. Hmm. So, look, I love working in the CrossFit community. Working with Tia has been a blast. We're nearly 4 years in. She's won the games twice. We've got a couple of months left before hopefully going. Well, she's going for three.
Yeah.
And working on that. And she's just, as an athlete, she's been a treat to work with. And now that she's living in America, it's still easy. Because we built the understanding before and now it just still works.
Yeah, you've done all the groundwork and now it's just... those 1%ers.
Yeah, and just communication and making sure she sends through videos here and there just for technique as well. Because otherwise, you know, you're just a programmer.
Yeah.
And programming is great, but you got to understand your athletes to be able to program. You know, when you buy a generic program online, none of them know how many hours sleep you had last night, how much stress you were under today at work. And so a coach one-on-one, if you're in person, if Paddy, you're my athlete and we show up for a session, we're just walking out, talking. How's your day? Mate, shit house. Jesus, I had three patients die on the table today. And I'm like, just don't even know what's going on.
It generally doesn't happen, guys.
I've not. No sleep last night. Just, I don't even think I've eaten today. I can't even remember. I've just changed your program
as
we're walking.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wow, I had something pretty intense we've been building up to. We're going to do some, you know, some pretty, a pretty hard session, but I've just changed it. You didn't know.
Yeah.
You didn't know your program. Okay. So that's, you know, that's good coaching. But if you're just on a program, how many people come in here and they're busted? Their Achilles is literally blowing up and they got 19Ks to do tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have to do tomorrow. Otherwise, they will not finish their marathon.
Yeah.
Because the number's there. And if they miss that, how do they catch it up? Because next week's 21.
Yeah.
How, like how the 19's gone. I can't do it. So having a guide and a program's great, but you got to take it with a grain of salt.
Mm.
And trying to become smarter, and especially as you get older. So I'm nearly, well, I'm 40 this year. Mm. So as you get older, one of the big things, you got to get smarter.
Yeah.
Got to learn how to do things better. Listen to the body. Doesn't mean you give in to everything. Yeah. But you sit there and when you do cross the line, you know you didn't. You're like, ah, that's my fault. Happy days. But as you get smarter, then you work out when to push and when to hold back a bit.
Yeah.
Going for a long, slow run, what's the negative in that? If you run smooth, you run well, it's long, it's slow, comfortable heart rate, training your aerobic system, you're not busted at the end of it, there is no negative.
No.
But because something else was programmed that day, it can be taken as a negative.
Yeah.
Let's go another little step. Someone returning from injury or a beginner, run, walk. Brilliant.
Yeah.
But walking's failing in running. You ask, a runner comes in, how far did you run today? 5Ks. But I walked 3 times, so really.
Pretty just, useless run.
Terrible. But if we're in a gym and we want to do 20 pull-ups, that's your goal. If you did 10, 5 and 5, good sesh.
Yeah.
Next week you did 12, 4 and 4, great. And you build up to 20 and you get 20, fantastic.
Mm.
So run walk for me is brilliant. And the reason I love walk rather than rest is that when we're walking, all the cogs in the body work great. You know, for walking, our body is never more at ease in terms of the cogs turning internally. The plumbing works great. So as we walk, we can sit there and get good stuff in and flush out some of the waste product.
Hmm.
All that tightness we're feeling in those calf muscles. Hmm. Okay. If we just walk for a bit and your body flushes out a lot of that waste and junk, then you run again. That's brilliant. But if you keep pushing through is that technique fails, gets worse and worse and worse, and you just build into another injury. So trying to convince runners that run walk is actually brilliant. And just that little bit of walking could be 100 meters,
exactly.
20 seconds. It just gives time for the body to recalibrate. Heart rate comes down a little bit. Cogs turn a little bit better. Mm. Because running is about testing how well you can keep the plumbing in terms of good stuff in, junk out, good stuff in, junk out.
Yeah.
How well you can keep that going towards your threshold. Walking's when the body goes, we got this, we're under control.
Yeah, sweet, no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so walking's not failing.
You walked in your last marathon.
Fail.
Goldie.
Yeah.
A couple of times.
I did.
Yeah.
Still got a sub 3.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you can walk and run a marathon in sub 3.
Yeah. Like
brilliant.
I ran the UTA 22 course with a friend a couple of weeks ago, and Blue Mountains, the hills there, like, impossible. And she's a runner. And up until that time, she had in her mind she had to run the whole way.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, there's no fucking way you can run the whole way. It's just, even the people that win this shit don't run the whole
way. That's right.
She's like, but it's a run. I'm like, yes, but you have to walk. You have to physically walk because you can't get there. She was like, if I wouldn't have known this, I would have broken out and cried.
Yeah.
Because I have to run.
Like, well, it's a mindset thing.
Yeah.
And again, if you consider that walking's fouling, then it really is. Because everything then, we know that, you know, state of mind is so important for everything, for life, for performance, for sport, anything. And so, yeah, if walking's failing, if you get to that point, everything just goes downhill.
Mm.
It's hard to pick back up from there. Whereas walking literally, again, can bring your nervous system down a notch, your heart rate down a notch, your breathing down a notch. Again, the cogs internally, just think of everything turning a bit better. Brilliant. The other thing that I love to teach my runners is how to run incredibly slowly, efficiently.
Mm.
Like squatting with an empty bar, okay, is how to run slowly, efficiently. So when I do sessions with them one-on-one, I get them at the most uncomfortably slow speed I can, and they run like crap. And the reason is that when you get to that point, you're at your default worst because of fatigue, because of the weather, because of nutrition, whatever else. We only get to that point when we're really shattered. So if I can get them to run at a very slow speed efficiently, at whatever point they need that, whatever point they need that in life, they've got it.
Yeah.
And they've got it efficient because then at that point, again, heart rate, breathing comes down and they're like, oh, I'm starting to feel good.
Mm.
Now you got a choice. You can go hard again. You can push again. But most of the time we could talk bonking is people push, push, push. They're on the brink. They're on the limit. And if they bonk, something failed. We'll look at that later.
Yeah.
Okay. What if, again, they get into that point, they could pull it back, but run smooth and well, like your walk, but run smooth and well, everything calms down a bit in the body, body pulls things back together, everything's like, okay, I don't feel too bad now, right? All right, and then they can pick it up again. Yeah. So I like my runners to have that as a tool in their toolkit. Run in slowly, efficiently, which comes to cadence. It's got to be like literally I walk alongside them.
Yeah.
I'm like, tell me you couldn't do that right now for 10Ks if I asked you. You'll be sore tomorrow because they're returning from injury. They haven't done it. But like, tell me you couldn't do that all day if you had to.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, this feels just too easy. I'm like, good. We need to practice that. Not heaps, just practice that and have that as a tool. Because if we do get to that point of running slow, it is always hunched over, horrible. Everything feels awful.
Yeah.
There's no breathing. Okay. Rib cage is closed. It's just, it's a horrible position. So running slowly, efficiently is another little thing to take away.
Yeah. It's a good tool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Sweet.
Wow.
Anything else?
I had a few questions to ask you, but you hit them all.
Okay.
Yeah. I had some things noted down, but sorted.
So one of my questions was, and it, this almost applies to me as well, but it's super common with the patients that I see, is they're trying to, you know, they're doing the right thing. They're in appropriate footwear. Their technique is looking pretty good. They're pretty strong, but they've just got this like kind of tightness up through their calves. Not like pain, not an injury, but it's just they've just tight calves. They're working. And that's what we spoke to, I think, before we started recording, talking about like the windlass mechanism through the foot, which is essentially how the plantar fascia winds up when you take load on your foot and how the plantar fascia unwinds, so like kind of springing off the ground.
Yeah, that's so it's the arch that's what loading and springing.
Yeah, that's what the windlass mechanism kind of is. And if you don't have a good big toe, that's an ineffective system, so then you use your calves a bit more.
Yeah.
So I see all these people who have quite strong calves, but their calves are tight. I'm like, well, what's going on? You raise the heel, drop in the shoe, like all these things that people kind of throw around. And it all comes back to how the foot kind of functions.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's the big toe and the windlass mechanism.
So we've got big toe, take that away, calves work harder.
Yeah.
And they'll do a great job until they don't.
Yeah.
So take the big toe away, calves work harder because it takes the arch away.
Yeah.
Right. Put heel pitch in shoes permanently from age 5. Calves are shortened already. Calves are
short, yeah.
So we're talking about shortness or tightness in two different fields, right? We've got length of muscle and tendon.
That's pure length. Tightness.
Yes, tightness within the fibers, and I talk about that way more. Because if you stretch, you're very rarely going to get rid of any of that tightness within the fibers themselves. I call them beef jerky.
Yeah.
So I get these muscles in. I'm like, mate, we need fillet steaks. This shit here is beef jerky.
Yeah.
And the other one I'll use is dreadlocks. They're just tight bands. Now, for anyone that's got long hair out there or kids, daughters with long hair, if they've got a knot in their hair, you cannot pull their hair to release the knot.
Mm.
Stretching, when you've got tight, gritty beef jerky muscles, you ain't going to get rid of that.
Mm.
I don't care how much you stretch. And stretching's boring. I'm not saying don't stretch. Just saying to get rid of what you've got in there is not going to work.
Yeah.
We've got to do it through load, okay? Through controlled load and obviously getting feet to work. But, yeah, so if we've got a big toe not working, calves work harder. If we've got heel pitch, they've become short over time.
Yeah.
So then if we drop down to zero heel pitch, people get pain in their Achilles.
Yeah.
And flat shoes are bad. No, the shoes that deformed you over all those years are bad.
Yeah, yeah.
All right? No one in my profession has ever been able to answer the question at what age should we lift a child's heel higher than the toes?
What age should we?
Yes. Yeah. When? Because everyone argues that heel pitch, you know, if we take people out of heel pitch, they get injured. So all the barefoot people out there, you're all nuts, you're idiots. We know best. Heel pitch is good. Da-da-da-da-da. We need support. At what age do we take a healthy child's foot that is designed to be horizontal? Nothing else.
Yeah.
Okay, the foot's designed to be horizontal and lift the heel higher. No one can answer that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got big toe out of position. We've got heel pitch, which shortens the calf muscle over time. But we've also got 33 joints in each foot not able to truly express their motion because they're in supportive shoes. What's the next up the chain?
Your calf.
Calf muscles. Now, when I say calves, you've got 13 muscles in that lower leg below your knee.
It's
13 of them. Okay. So it's easy just to look at two calves. Now, there's other ones that are deep to that. Three more just in front of that. And they're all in it together.
Mm.
Okay. So those tight calf muscles, if you lock the feet up, calves are going to go, not a problem, buddy. I got you.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
For a long while. And by the time they come and see us with their plantar fascia heel pain, with their Achilles pain, with their shin splints, is that they don't often describe sore calves because the calves stopped working. They're only working at 70% because they're beef jerky. So 30% more stress goes somewhere. Doesn't vanish. Goes somewhere. Achilles tendon. plantar fascia heel, right? So when I go and put my thumbs and fingers around their calves gently, because otherwise they'll punch me, is they're like wincing.
Yeah.
And because those calves are so tight and wound up, but they didn't cause pain directly. There was no pain input to the brain from the calves.
Yeah.
It was the Achilles or the plantar fascia or the shin splints. Mm. So then if we just treat the Achilles or the plantar fascia, we ignore the calves, we're just treating symptoms. Yeah. We'll go back around. So, yeah, if you lock your feet up, your calves will do more work, and they're awesome. Yeah. They'll do so much work. But eventually they won't. If you're doing two jobs and getting paid for one, unless you're a saint, something's going to give.
Yeah.
Okay? So the calves are doing their job, plus they're trying to help what the foot and arch is not able to do. Eventually they pack it in, and then the pain presents somewhere else.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So where you've got pain is not usually where you got the problem.
Mm.
You got to treat the pain because you need some symptom relief, but you got to treat the cause.
Yeah, absolutely. Sweet. I think
So it's not like your calves are tight, stretch them.
No.
That's
no.
Why, that's
but
why
everyone comes in and sees me and they've got these injuries and they've been told to stretch. Now, you got a sore Achilles, which is pissed and cranky. Let's just go and stretch it.
Yeah.
You got a kid with severs, which is around the heel bone that's aggravated by tension. And stretch it.
And that's why I'm a bit of a – what's the opposite of an advocate? I don't know, a disadvocate. No, it's not. I just made that up. I just don't like stretching. Like I don't like it. I don't think stretching is fundamentally a negative thing. I just think stretching is being used in place of other positive things.
Active like, range of motion.
I'm really, really tight. I've been stretching and I'm still tight. So I stretched it more and I'm still tight. I'm like, fuck. Oh my God. If people just stopped stretching and did other stuff, we'd be better.
And stretching.
If you want to stretch on top of the other stuff, go for it.
Clamshells for weak glutes. But then you run with shitty posture and you can't use it anyway.
Yeah.
So the work you do, if it's straight from the textbook, like I get stuff from any profession, but they come in and I'm like, I could have freaking told you that.
Yeah.
If you're seeing another profession, I want you to see them because they know the stuff I don't.
Mm.
And they're the people that I need to work with because I don't know everything. No. Yeah. I know a few things about feet and how it connects with the rest of the body, but there's so much other parts that I look at patterns. And that's if there's one thing I said I was good at, it's looking at patterns.
Yeah.
Whether we're walking, lifting, running, is that just through time, you know what it's like when you walk through an airport and you've just literally picked everyone apart, even though you're having a conversation with, you know, your wife or partner as you're walking, but you've picked everyone's walking apart as you're going or movement patterns. Someone comes in from my gym to my clinic and they got pain. I'm like, yeah, well, when you do burpees, you do this. When you do box jumps, you do this. When you do this, you do this. They're like, what? I'm like, well, I'm not the coach. I'm not there to tell you that. It's not my position, but it's just movement, you know, paints a picture in my head pretty easily. And again, we're literally just creatures of habit. And if you have good habits all day, every day, you have less problems.
100%.
And you can get in the habit of stretching, but stretching doesn't create good movement patterns.
No, it doesn't.
If it allows a range of motion, okay. Yeah. Was there a better way to do it? Whatever. If it allows a range of motion, but then you need control of the range of motion.
Yeah.
And then you need to be able to connect between one position and another.
Yeah.
So you got to have a range, control of range, and be able to move between positions.
And I think a lot of people, when they stretch, you might potentially maybe have a temporary increase in range of motion that you just gave yourself.
Yeah.
Then you don't use it, you don't load it, and it goes away.
Can I throw one thing out there for everybody that's got plantar fascia pain?
Go for it.
Stop icing. Stop icing. Put it in your whiskey or have your whiskey on the rocks, whatever you want. Stop icing, okay? The plantar fascia has one of the worst blood supplies in the whole body. Nothing in the body lives, breathes, or heals without blood. Mm. Blood brings nutrients to heal.
Yeah.
When you put ice on your plantar fascia, you get less nutrients to heal.
Yeah.
Heat, 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 heat. If you sit at the desk all day and that foot's not on a wheat bag for 8 hours, you're wasting so much precious time.
Mm.
So heat, heat, heat. Don't make the heat too hot. If you make the wheat bag hot, when you put your foot on it, your body's going to go, what's that?
Yeah.
And it's going to be defensive. So lovely and warm all day. Within days, you'll be like, oh, my God. Simplest thing in the world. Now, I just put myself out of some work there, okay, because heat could almost put me out of business with a lot of things I treat. Obviously, the heat's not going to solve the reason you had in the first place, but stop icing that sucker. Stop rolling on the frozen water bottle, okay? Get that wheat bag out. Use it all day, every day.
I think, don't we know that the only good thing about icing is it just numbs the area?
Yeah.
So if you have pain on your heel and you ice it, you'll probably numb it for a bit.
Yep,
and
that's it.
You know, if something's numb, it's generally less painful, so... That's kind of the function of ice.
Why are we icing the Achilles?
That's how it works. why you're just numbing something that has a biomechanical flaw and is overloaded.
Spot on. Now, if someone's in so much pain, they're going to go into shock, like they've got a bone sticking out of the leg, and you put ice on to keep them from going in shock, boom.
Fuck yeah.
If there is a pain level that is so high, the body cannot heal.
Mm.
And I'm not talking about your plantar fascia pain that hurts when you get out of bed in the morning. No, ice won't help that either. Okay. No. But if that pain level is so high, we've got to break that cycle, and ice can help do that. Good. Yeah. Okay. But otherwise, stop icing that thing.
Yeah.
All right. Heat. And there's heaps more with plantar fascia. But if you've got strong, healthy feet, you've got healthy calves, you're not getting plantar fascia pain.
100%.
Yeah.
I don't care what shoes you wear. You're not getting plantar fascia pain.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got healthy calves and strong, healthy feet.
I haven't felt my plantar fascia. I haven't had a conscious awareness of my plantar fascia for years. I used to, if I go back 5 years, when I wore completely different shoes and didn't know what running was, I had niggles in my plantar fascia, but I haven't felt it for a long time. It's really interesting hearing you talk. So I went for my first run back after my little foot injury, what are we now, 5 days ago? And I knew that I wasn't running perfectly well because I could feel it. I still had some symptoms and I could feel that I was adjusting my gait a little bit. But during the run, I actually felt fine. Then after the run, I felt fine. That night, I felt fine. Got out of bed the next day and couldn't walk because my calves were so tight. So my foot was probably just not moving. My foot was grabbing on like a claw. So my 33 joints weren't walking. And so I propelled myself with my calves, not with my feet.
Yep.
And then the next day I had significantly overworked calves and couldn't walk the next day.
Spot on. You couldn't share the load.
Yeah.
Nothing in the body works on its own, right?
So that was my sign to me that I returned back to running too hard, too aggressive, and my foot wasn't okay with that.
Yeah, but we've got to learn from that too. So I say to people, we can't just keep waiting. Rest does not fix injuries. It hides them.
Mm.
Oh, I've had 6 weeks off my shin splints. I go back, they're back.
Yeah.
Oh, I rested for 2 months. I rested for 3 months. Rest doesn't fix injuries. It hides them.
Rest deloads you.
Yeah.
If something is sensitive to load, then you deload it, you'll have symptomatic relief.
Right, like, do something in that time to sit there to return full steam ahead.
Yeah, that's my important thing. My job 101.
Important thing, Tim said, you need to learn from those things. Right?
How old are you, Pat?
I'm 27.
Yeah, you got time. Yeah. You're good. Age is the number and it's irrelevant. The body doesn't recover as well as when we're 21, when you can just do stupid stuff and get away with it. No dramas.
Yeah.
But the body's still awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And if you continually learn about it, there's just more and more to tap into.
Yeah.
You can't tap into it all. You've got to pick your bits that you can do. And again, bring it back to feet, is that there is so much untapped potential that is easy to gain.
Yeah.
Performance-enhancing feet.
Mm.
Performance-enhancing feet, all right? There's so much potential in them, and it's not that hard to get it.
Better than EPO.
Yeah, apparently. I don't know. Not an endurance athlete.
If people want more information, Tim, where can people find you?
Wollongong Podiatry is my podiatry clinic. Now, being up here in Sydney as I am every Thursday, I don't treat or anything, but people really struggle to get to Wollongong.
It's far.
Yeah, you need a passport. You've got to go through customs immigration. Yeah. Promise you, it's not that hard. So Wollongong Podiatry is where I live in terms of treatment. The Running Lab, Instagram and Facebook, the_running_lab.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably the other one. And my podcast that If Enough of You Hassle Me is called Strong Feet Radio. And I had the logo actually made up 2.5. They're the two best places. My workshops, any practitioners out there, I do a 2-day Strong Feet certification every year.
Yeah.
And that's the one where we just, from go to well of everything I do, I have more physios, strength coaches, chiros, massage therapists than I ever do podiatrists.
Yeah.
That's fine, is that anyone that wants to learn about feet from a practitioner point of view or coach point of view, I love having coaches there.
Yeah.
Coaches are on the front line. They see all the problems before they're a problem.
Yeah.
They're only once they're a problem, they come to us.
Yeah.
Okay. So that, I do running workshops. That's just on a basically, if you've got a gym and you want me to come do a running workshop, we start a conversation.
Yeah.
And work on that. Sweet. Yeah, that's about it. Pretty easy to find.
Sweet.
So for all our listeners in Cuba and Vietnam and Sweden and Canada.
And the Netherlands and the States. Just go on
Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah, wouldn't go.
And ask me which shoes to wear.
Yeah.
Sweet, mate. Thanks for that.
Been fun.
That was amazing. That's a lot of good nuggets of beautiful information that it's going to help a lot of people, I think.
Yep. Don't ditch your orthotics and your supportive shoes overnight, but just think your feet can be awesome. Just got to train them like any other part of the body. Yeah,
100%.
Invest a bit of time, get the reward.
Sweet.
Love it. I'm inspired. I hope you're all inspired. Reach out to Tim if you want more.
And let us know if you have any other questions.
Sick.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tim.